Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Como yo, chicos, chicas, por eso no escuchamos tu rock. Masticamos odio, chicos, sin diversión ni trabajo fijo. ¿Quieres tu estéreo? ¿Quieres que la cuide? Cuida coches, te lo cuido. Cuida coches, te lo cuido. ¡Wow! Como yo, chicos, chicas, pobres, no escuchamos tu rock. Masticamos audio, chicos, sin diversión ni trabajo fijo. ¿Quieres un deseo? ¿Quieres que lo cuide? Cuida coche, hazte la cuido. Cuida coche, hazte la cuido. Cuida coche, hazte la cuido. Cuida coche, hazte la cuido.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are sitting in the legendary Filipino place, Lasa, with Phil Rosenthal, host, creator of Somebody Feed Phil, Netflix's new food travel documentary show. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
I'm excited not just to be here with you, but because, and I'm a little embarrassed to say this, I don't think I've ever had Filipino food. And my name is Phil.
Yeah. You would think that would be part of...
You'd think that'd be the first thing I go for.
You know, I actually...
Maybe it's self-loathing.
Self-loathing, and then you eat, and then you self-loathe again. It's a deliciously vicious cycle.
Yes.
I actually think the first time I had real Filipino food was here.
So, oh.
Yeah. They're great. Friends of the Snacky Tunes. So, your new show, you travel all over the world. You go to eat in all these places. But where you started in Queens.
Yes.
Which, unto itself, for anyone knows Queens, you actually probably don't have to leave Queens to eat everywhere in the world because every ethnicity of food is there.
In 2018.
Yes.
In 1960.
What was that like?
I don't know. As a baby, so I had a very limited diet, but... I didn't stay there very long. I stayed there till I was two or three. Then we moved to Riverdale in the Bronx.
Okay.
But we could have been in the middle of New York City. My mother was not making food a priority. She was working. She was a paralegal secretary. My father was working in the clothing industry. And so we didn't have a lot of money. And, you know, she didn't have a lot of time.
But, I mean, even growing up, as
I never went out to eat.
With Jewish culture and things like that, food, I mean, was food part of your sphere at all or part of your awareness?
Yeah, pretty bad sphere.
So, you know, you're growing up. When did you start thinking about food? Was it early in your career because, you know, you...
The moment I left that house.
The moment you left that house.
I went to college. I've told this before, but I had some pasta and sauce with other freshmen at Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. And there was little white bits in the pasta, in the red sauce that I'd never had before. What is that delicious thing? And they said, what, garlic? I said, yes, garlic. I never had that flavor.
Now, my mother has just a jar of garlic and oil that's always been in our fridge for as long as I can remember. So I can imagine the revelation of that moment when you had garlic for the first time.
It blew my mind.
But blowing your mind with garlic, did that then open the door?
Yes.
So
you remember in Wizard of Oz when she opens the door and now the movie's in color?
Yes.
It's like that.
So were you upset with your parents? Because it's sort of like, with not knowing, you're like, I didn't know that food like this existed. But now that you know that this food exists, were you like, Mom and Dad, what the hell?
It's like you were asking for a bike your whole childhood and you never got one. And then you find out that your parents had a bike shop.
They had access to the bike parts.
That's right.
So you go to college, you're there, and then in the late 80s you move from New York to LA. What was it like moving to LA? And also, you know, the food in LA in the late 80s was not what it is today,
right.
But it also wasn't even on the comparable level of what leaving what you had discovered in
exactly
New York.
Exactly right. So I had discovered foods in New York in my 20s. I lived there all throughout my 20s. And now I was doing stuff like in New York, I was doing 4-star restaurants once a year. I would save up. I had no money. I was a starving actor. I ate tuna fish for dinner. I ate hot dogs and pizza. And then once a year on my birthday, because I read about in the New York Times, this magical place is called 4-star restaurants. I'd be like, I got to get here because I love food.
Quilted Giraffe, that
type
of place.
That's right. Exactly right.
Yeah.
The original Le Cirque, Lutèce, Le Côte Basque, Le Grand Oui. Right?
What was that like?
It was like you were on another planet, a planet of rich people who sat with jackets and ties, and the place was so elegant, you thought you were in Paris. You thought you were in Versailles. They were gorgeous places with fresh flowers everywhere, and the waiters in tuxedos. And the food, the presentation was like nothing you'd ever dreamed of. And it was so beautiful, and the flavors were so pristine and great, in addition to being gorgeous and Instagrammable before there was Instagram.
Well, that's a good point, because now I've heard it before, and I have to shake my head. That's like, oh, I don't need to go to this restaurant. I've seen it on Instagram. Or I've seen a video for it. I know, it's crazy.
That's what people who don't care about eating.
Yes, but back then, to go into these temples of food, especially when the other 364 nights of the year is canned tuna fish and toast.
Yeah.
It must have blown your mind.
Absolutely. It was the greatest. My friend, I had another idiot who would save up $100. When my parents heard this, by the way, that I was doing this, they thought I should be committed.
Well, listen,
You may as well just take the $100, throw it down the toilet, which is kind of what you're doing.
I know, but, you know, I went through the same thing when I started eating out at these fancy restaurants in my 20s, and my parents were like,
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are your priorities?
And then I was like, no, come with me. And they're like, they'd get it, but they'd be like, still, what are you doing?
I did it too.
I know.
Finally, when I had enough money, when I came back, you know, after a little Hollywood money, I came back and I took them to Lutèce. That we don't care about these things. We don't care. Oh, then all of a sudden, oh, this is very good.
I know.
Ma, that was the point.
I know.
This is very good.
But I have to
say, you didn't tell me it would be very good. That's why I go.
I know, but when they start to appreciate it and you share with them, because sharing with your parents the food, you're like, I discovered this.
Yes.
I love it. It's so great.
Yes.
So
they still won't go on their dime.
No.
They're still not going to. They think, my parents, they live in Rockland County. So I grew up, I went to stay in Riverdale until I was 9. And then from 9 to 17, I lived in Rockland County, New York, half an hour upstate. And they lived there for 40 years. Okay? And then my mother, who's an opera nut, we said, if you sell your house, we'll put that money towards an apartment. I'll get you an apartment near Lincoln Center because you love the opera.
Just walk
on
over.
Like pre-heaven, right?
Right.
For them. My father said he didn't want to go. Why not? Do you know how much a chicken is in that neighborhood?
Well, you don't have to go to Danielle. You don't have to go there for a chicken.
But you understand it's a mindset?
Yeah.
Your apartment is free.
The apartment's free.
You're living...
But the chicken is a few dollars more.
That's right.
Well, so before you bought them the apartment, you had to go out to L.A., and create a show called Everybody Loves Raymond.
I get ahead of myself.
It's fine. It's totally fine. That's why I'm here. But you go to Everybody.
I go to LA. When I come to LA in 1989, I've tried 4-star restaurants. I've tried Mexican food in New York.
Right.
Yes, it was very Americanized.
Yes.
But I was doing it. The Chinese food can't be beat in New York. I'm like a New Yorker. I'm like a Woody Allen New Yorker. The good part to him. But I've been raised to think that New York is the capital of the world.
Yeah.
And it is. And I come to L.A. and it's a Woody Allen joke. I hated it at first. All they had were chili burgers.
Avocado toast.
No, they didn't have avocado toast. That's a new thing.
That's a new thing.
But they had, you know, his joke was he got a plate of mashed yeast.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, mashed yeast.
There was that bullshit. And there was that kind of aura about it, too. Weird junk food and then weird vegetarian stuff that
no one was happy eating.
There was one fine dining restaurant, maybe,
Spago? Spago was
maybe.
Around,
was yes, around Spago time. Was happening. And then you just saw it explode in the 90s. You just saw it, like, really come into its own. Until now, I honestly think it's a better food city than New York.
I could say I agree with you at some point. I think there's more opportunity to try new things. I think New York...
We have
to
more open a, yeah. cultural diversity even yes. than New York. Which, and these cultures bring their foods. The biggest population of Korean people outside of Korea is here.
Well, most people who come from Korea say that the best Korean food is here in Koreatown because of the ingredients.
Same with Japanese, same yeah. with Chinese, same with Ethiopians.
And you
same
don't
with
have to go to Queens.
Mexicans.
You don't have to go out to the boroughs like you do in New York.
Yes, and you have a car.
Yes.
Which makes it, in New York, as much as I love it, and I'm a New Yorker. Okay?
Me too. Yes.
As much as I love it, you walk around Manhattan. Every restaurant is packed, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
Because everyone lives on top of each other,
yeah.
literally, and they have to eat. And so, oh, I'm busy. I'm going to that restaurant. I can't even get into the bad place.
No.
I can't even get... I can't. It's
I'd
packed.
Like two top at 8 p.m. at the worst restaurant in New York.
Yes.
Oh, it's booked?
Yes.
For the next 2.5 hours?
That's right.
Okay, I'll wait.
Yes.
So while the food culture is exploding in the 90s, and
yep.
you're here... With a successful show, are you taking advantage of your newfound success and eating out at the burgeoning restaurants? Or
yes.
are you still...
Not okay. only that.
Yes?
I invest in a restaurant.
Really?
Because I love it so much.
What's the restaurant?
The restaurant was Jar.
Yes, Suzanne
So
Trent.
I was an investor in Jar.
Love
and
her.
And then for some reason, the I think the building was being sold or something after a year... It was going to go away. And then I said, that's sad. I said to my business manager, that's very sad. What, can we do anything? And he said, you can buy it. So I did because I loved it. I didn't know what a headache it was to own a restaurant.
No.
And so after a year of that, I was I sold it to Suzanne Tract.
Yeah.
Because the restaurant was doing so well. And God bless her. The reason Jar is still phenomenal is because Suzanne Tract has stayed at that restaurant.
She's wonderful.
The food is exactly what it was when it first opened, I think 15, 16 years ago now.
Yes.
I think it's one of the best restaurants still in L.A. You just don't hear about it so much because all the new stuff
yeah,
gets
well, I mean,
the press.
It's been around for 17 years.
Yeah.
It's
but
tough.
It is great.
It is great. And once you...
I took the money.
You took the money.
From the sale of
right.
that and started investing in other restaurants to the point now where I don't even know how many I've invested in.
You're like, sir, we have your table as a part owner. You're like, oh, I didn't even know I had a stake in here. But yes, I will take
it. You know what? I never pull that. If it's busy
yeah.
and they say, we really don't have, I said, I don't throw any weight around. I'm like,
good.
Glad you're busy.
Glad you're busy.
Yes, right.
The check is mailed to, that's P-H-I-L.
But by the way, there's the real reason that I invest in restaurants is because I'm not very bright.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
It's a stupid investment if you want to make money, but the truth is I'm not in it for the money.
No.
I feel like it's supporting the arts. This, why should your sense of taste be any less than your sense of sight or sound or hearing, right? This is an art form.
So I want to talk about your support of the arts because you also have started really supporting the arts through your media work in food,
yes.
Your shows, your Instagram, and things like that. So
food just came. Are we allowed to talk about
it? We can talk about the food.
A spoon
For the coconut.
Oh, nice. And can we have a few share plates?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to grab that all.
Thank you. Can we take a picture?
Yeah, take a picture.
That's what people do.
Yeah, so as you're taking a picture...
I'm like a person.
You know, part of what you've grown into and talking about restaurants and supporting them has come through both the TV show and then, you know, subsequent of that, social media.
Yes.
But I want to go back because everyone thinks of you now as someone who's in the food world.
Yes.
But before that, when you were just, you know, a showrunner, writer, producer, making documentaries, you may have secretly been into food, but how did you start to think about wanting to host your own food show?
Okay, so during Raymond,
yes,
I asked Ray at the end of season one what he was going to do on his hiatus, and he said he was going to the Jersey Shore.
Okay.
Like he always did.
Yeah.
I said, oh, that's nice. Hey, have you ever been to Europe? years of it.
And he said, no. I said, why not? He said, I'm not really interested in other cultures.
Okay.
Even his own Italian.
Right.
And a light bulb went off. We got to do that show where we send him over to Italy as him and we send him back as me. Someone
right.
who's in love with travel and food and Italy especially and the food in Italy. Took a few years to convince him
right.
and CBS to give us the money to do the very special episode where we go to Italy.
Because you filmed on location and not on the back lot.
Well, of course. Well, the interiors we filmed at home, but the right. exteriors were all Italy, Rome, and a little town outside of Rome called Anguillara.
And so then how did that episode go?
That episode was great. I was so happy with that episode, not only because it became our little movie, it was a special hour, but what I saw, what happened to Ray, the character that
yeah.
I wrote about his transformation, but I saw Ray Romano.
As a person.
It happened to him.
Right.
And when I saw that, the light bulb went off big time. I want to do this for other people. That was in the year 2000. So since then, I was trying to get this show.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick musical break. We're going to dig in, divide up all this food.
Mm.
And we're going to talk about the old show, the new show, and...
Lumpia
and theme songs. Here on Snacky Tunes, we have a song from the archives on heritageradionetwork.org.
Bye.
and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. Now that we have stuffed our face.
Oh, now I have to lie down. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you so much. We didn't actually get to talking about the show because we went into food comas. So after this light goes off in your head about teaching people about the importance of food and traveling.
I find that traveling is the most mind-expanding thing we can do in life.
Sure.
It changed my life in my early 20s. I never went anywhere when I was a kid. But in my early 20s, I took a courier flight, meaning DHL paid for my flight as long as their stuff went as my excess baggage as a coach passenger on a European airline.
What? That still exist?
No, because now they're DHL. But when they were starting, this is what they were doing. There might be comparable things, and I'm always turning on the TV and I'm seeing $69 flight to Copenhagen, or $69 flight, $99 flight. This is nothing.
There's nothing.
Go, people! 2/3 of Americans don't have a passport.
That's bonkers.
Maybe we wouldn't be in the shape we're in.
No.
If more people had their minds expanded a tiny bit by travel.
I think the first official document I'll get for my future daughter.
Yeah.
Passport. Get her dressed up. Take her to Europe.
Yes.
So
that was in the back of my mind always. I wanted to do this show, even though I was pursuing, you know, more sitcoms, more things to do with Hollywood, because, you know, the agents don't want you to do a food and travel show if you're me. They'd like the next...
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't blame them,
Did
but...
Did you pitch any sitcom food shows?
No. Never. It's not funny.
Those have never worked.
No.
They've never done well. Was there a lot of food in Everybody Loves Raymond? I mean, there was like a lot
every
of...
Every show.
Every show, but like...
Every show.
Every show was food. That's what I thought.
Well, the mother, you know, wielded power over the family by her... amazing cooking.
Right.
And the joke was that his own wife couldn't cook.
No.
Okay? So that was a big bone of contention throughout the show. I will say this. It extended offstage, too. We had the best craft service in town. Now, you can ask anybody.
Did you help organize that?
That's all I did. No, I did.
Phil, that was, please, can you sign off on this? I don't know. I'm putting together this spread for you guys tomorrow.
That's right. That's
I'll get notes when I can.
Forget the jokes. We got to eat. We needed... The army travels on its stomach. I really believe that.
Yep.
And if you can, one of the best ways to show that you care about the people you work with is provide nice food for them.
Yeah.
So what do I mean? Cinnamon buns from Ann Sather's in Chicago once in a while.
Oh, so you're...
Deli from New York once in a while.
Oh.
Crab claws from Joe's in Miami once in a while.
Once in a while.
Once a year.
Once a year.
That one. But a great taco truck is backstage on shoot night. In-N-Out Burger Truck is backstage on shoot night. Really good food that people loved. And we just... that's how you make a family.
Yeah. That's how you make a family.
Food is the great connector.
It is. It's how you really get to know a culture and people.
Yeah.
And so the show wraps up.
Yeah.
How did you get to making your first food series? How did you convince...
Here's what happened.
The people to let you be a host without having any... Not that
exactly.
You weren't funny and talented, but you weren't a food host.
Why should anybody think I am if I never did it before?
Right. Now, and let me follow up. How many people knew that how much you'd invested in restaurants and been a curator of the craft service table?
I don't know if that helped or not. I'll tell you the big thing that helped.
Yeah.
I made a documentary.
Sure.
I made a documentary about going to Russia... The Russians wanted me to help them turn my sitcom into Everybody Loves Kostya, okay? And that was called Exporting Raymond, and it's on Netflix also now. And you can see that. That was the genesis to me getting my own show, because people saw that show and said, we like the idea of you going places.
Yeah.
And I said, so does my wife.
Yeah.
And so they said, do you have any ideas? I said, I did. I've had this idea now for a while.
Yeah.
It came from the Raymond episode.
Sure.
What if I did a show where I went around the world and showed you the best places to eat in an effort to get you to travel?
Right. So it's a travel show, show that's couched as a food show.
It is couched as a food show. The food and hopefully the humor is a way to suck you in to getting to the people. You know, I never tried... it's not a political... show. I never meant to be political, but suddenly in the world we're in, it's a political statement to suddenly embrace other people and other cultures.
Right.
So, okay, then I'm political then. I'm just a friggin' human being who loves other folks, and I think that we should celebrate our diversity, celebrate what's different, celebrate that we're having Filipino food right here in Los Angeles, and it's delicious. Life is good, people. We all have something to offer, and it's all great if you allow it in your head. It's your head that needs to swivel a bit.
You know, I want to talk about the humor, because especially in the history of television, the comedy shows have been the first ones to deal with a lot of the hard-hitting...
Especially late.
Late night, but also, you know, All in the Family and things like that.
Right, right, right.
And there are not a lot of travel food shows that have humor or are actively telling jokes in the way that you're doing it. There might be a one-off, you know, sort of snarky remark or, you know,
it's
something like
that. It's the only thing I had to bring to the table.
But so... You know, how do you approach that? Because some people could be like, he's not taking it seriously, or this is not how we do food shows, because not only does the humor part of it, but you also have a very, in the most complimentary possible, a very Jewish approach to it as well. It's like this Jewish humor.
I will humor. Not sit here and have you denigrate my people. No, it's true.
But it's true.
I am who I am. Listen, you got to be specific.
Yeah.
That if I'm trying to be vague and kind of white bread it up for America, it's bland. Like white bread. And so you're getting a rye bread from
me.
A
nice, crusty
rye. Yes,
right,
right. But I don't know how to explain it other than I can only be who I am. There's no acting on the show. And yet I do understand that I have a certain character.
Sure.
I know who I am.
Right.
But I don't have to play it. I am it.
Do you play it up a little, though? Do you ever give a little extra, like, mug into the camera, an extra joke?
I do know that if somebody tells me there might be snakes in this water...
Yes.
My first reaction, the first instinct I have as somebody who's been in show business...
Yeah.
...is to look at the camera, because you're my friend.
Yeah.
And if you are my friend, and once I understand that the camera's my friend and I'm looking at you at home, you're with me on the journey. So I think of the camera as my buddy that I'm looking at, and can you believe this? Or can you believe how great this is? Or am I going to die now?
It's all that. You're like,
So in that respect, I guess you could say I'm playing it. But it's 100% natural reaction. It doesn't... You don't see me think about it. I just do it.
It doesn't also hurt that your brother's on the other side of the camera...
Exactly right.
...who's put you in this situation,
yes.
And you like...
So I'm looking over at him. Like, and now I kill you.
Yeah. No, you come here.
Yes, you come over here. You eat this.
So you had the first, you had your series on PBS. It did really well.
There was something before that.
There was.
I learned a lot from
it. What was before this?
Amex were the first people to say, would you like to do something with food? Because we saw this.
The documentary.
Right. And I said, of course. And they said, well, you would need a famous chef to go with you because nobody knows who you are. So I said, okay. And I got Thomas Keller.
I'm sorry, I don't know who that
is.
How did you know him?
I had invested in Bouchard.
Sure.
And we became friends. Oh, I also, Jim Brooks saw me speak at a sitcom panel. And he said, you ever do any acting, man? And I said, yeah, when I was a kid, I did a little. And he goes, I might have something for you. 2 years after that, he put me in Spanglish. And I played a sous chef in a recreation of the French Laundry Kitchen.
Yeah, Adam Sandler. Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler played...
A chef,
and I was his sous chef. And I had a couple of big scenes. And the consultant on the movie was Thomas Keller. And
he's the go-to guy. He did Ratatouille
as well. When I got the part...
Yeah.
I learned I got the part in New York. The per se was just opening. I called over there and I said, I understand Chef Keller is going to be the consultant on this thing. Could I come and observe? And they said, well, we're kind of busy. We're opening. We'll call you back. 10 minutes later, Keller, come on over. And I came over and I spent an hour or two in the kitchen watching him run that army. It was fascinating.
It's incredible.
After that 2 hours, I had one question for him. Could I eat here? And he said, sure.
3 months.
Now, this was the hottest ticket in New York. You could not get in this place. It was worth standing on my feet in that kitchen. If I learned nothing else, I got to eat that meal.
Now, here's a question.
Yep.
Going back...
We became friends.
Because by that time, you'd eaten all over the world and things like that. How did that meal compare to the meals that you were eating when you were going out in your 20s?
I had been to the French Laundry.
Sure.
And I was told that it's not the name per se, the way he got it was, it's not the French Laundry per se. That's why per se, okay?
It's good.
To me, it was a hell of a lot like the French Laundry.
Yeah.
The only thing different to me was the setting and the view.
The view. It's a nice view.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Nice view. So you do Amex.
So I do that.
Yeah, so
and then we go to London for a week on Amex. And there's a producer, and he's going to produce like a TV show. I think it's a TV show. He books us into 27 restaurants in 7 days.
Wait.
That's more than breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And because it's Keller, they're all white tablecloth.
Oh,
and 90% white tablecloth. And I wanted to die after 3 days.
It's all like butter and
when
rich.
The food comes to the table like this, you want to go, oh, yeah. Not, oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, this is the food.
Literally,
the food
you couldn't
eat. You want to dig.
Yes.
Jump in.
But imagine if we were sitting here for 4 hours and this came out every 20 minutes.
For people who...
A tiny amount.
It may be
spectacular, but just my back can't take it, let alone my stomach. I can't take it.
Wait, were there cameras?
Yes.
So what were they filming? Just you guys having a conversation over food?
That's a great question because this is what I also learned. This particular producer was more concerned about what the food looked like Instagram-wise.
Yeah.
You know, shots, beauty food shots, which I understand. That's kind of the jokes of the medium, right? If my medium is sitcom and the jokes are the bread and butter of it, I understand that the food shot is the rock of the food show. Mm. However, to me, what I learned is it's only the connection to the people. And the people are way more interesting than the dish of food after 5 seconds.
I got it. So you were just dealing with the food only and no one in the kitchen?
No, the chefs would talk. It was kind of a food show.
Show.
Okay, but here's the thing.
Yeah.
I didn't like this setup. I was dying. I couldn't take it anymore. My pants hurt. It was boring to me. I didn't like. And I learned just as much about how to do what I wanted to do from doing the opposite. You learn as much from what not to do, right?
Yeah.
So, Amex, it turned out, they didn't even want a show. They wanted to cull scenes, bits from this, and present them in an evening for card members of the Platinum and Black Card variety. A dinner with Thomas Keller and me, hosting fancy food, inspired by our trip to London. Here's some clips of us in London. That's what the money was spent. I thought it was a TV show.
I guess that's
what I got out of
thing.
It. What I got out of
yeah.
it was my own clips that I liked,
ah.
that I made, that I could now sell and do my show.
So you essentially got a sizzle reel.
Exactly right. So it served its purpose in many ways. I learned what not to do. I knew that I was now going to go, if I should be so lucky to get the show, that my brother's a producer of television.
Oh, look at
of
that.
Different kinds of television.
And your mother made you hire him as well?
Okay, no. I wanted to hire him because I thought this is a dream job. When I told him that PBS is going to give me a show, that they're going to give me a show I get to go around the world and eat, he goes, really? What are you going to call the show? The Lucky Bastard?
I mean, it's true. There's a lot of times when you look at that, especially from a couch with maybe eating less than desirable takeout, when you see you going into these amazing kitchens, you go, that is a lucky... Well, I wouldn't know if... I'd use a probably harsher language than
That's
bastard.
Fine. Well, I couldn't make it the name of the show, but it is the name of my brother and I production company.
Well, listen, we're going to take a quick musical break.
Yes.
We're going to come back,
yes.
and we're going to talk about the new show,
Good.
Somebody Feed Phil.
Yes.
And we're going to get to that amazing...
On Netflix.
We have another song from the archives on Snacky Tunes here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
It's not that easy to be one of us. Seems so dangerous. You shut it down, you shut them out. Keep your body fighting through the mess that's in your head. All in your head. stand tall on the solid ground. Ain't that something to be proud about? I've got my lungs, I've got my sound. So hear me scream, hear me shout. The pain is loud, but the fight is louder. Breathe, let go and trust your feet. Run, just run. Fire, fire the gun. Breathe, let go and trust your feet. Run, just run. Just run, fire, fire the gun. Breathe, let go and trust your feet. Run, just run, fire, fire the gun.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Tell them what I'm doing right now.
Phil is digging into the sweet meat of a young coconut.
That's not a metaphor.
It's not a metaphor. We are also in public, so it's definitely not a metaphor. So you had the Amex trial.
Yeah.
You had the show on PBS.
Yeah.
You also had been investing in food forever.
Yeah.
And you had taken Ray Romano, both the character and the real human, on a trip to Italy.
Where he got woke.
Where he was woke. Before, I don't know what Italian for woke is.
Woke.
Yeah. And so now this has all led to your current moment, which is your new Netflix show, Somebody Feed Phil.
It's amazing. A star is born,
a star,
I think you would say.
Overnight.
Yes,
or
overnight.
Actually, brined and slowly braised.
Like a pastrami.
For a couple of decades.
Yeah.
So you did the show on PBS, and I don't want to hang there, but I want to know how you go from PBS to Netflix, because it's a different show. Like, it's similar because you're there and you're food, but, you know, like, for example, your first six episodes for PBS is, like, the greatest hits of traveling. Paris and Tokyo, things like that.
I call it Earth's Greatest Hits.
Earth's Greatest Hits.
Yeah.
It's like, here you go, here's your checklist. It's,
yeah.
It's like, go to Paris, go to this.
Yeah.
In the new show.
Yeah.
You're going to Bangkok. You're going to Saigon.
Yeah.
Tel Aviv.
Yeah. It's
Mexico City. It's not for beginners.
But a slightly bigger step outside the comfort zone.
Yes.
Which is what happens when you start traveling.
Yes, but the thing is, though, is you didn't start there. You, in many ways, you were the your viewers personified. Where it's like, we're going to take some baby steps.
That's right.
Get your passport.
Exactly
you don't need
right.
a visa.
That's right.
So then how did you
start? And one of every six shows, if I'm so lucky to continue, is always going to be in American City.
Yes.
Because
you went to New
I
Orleans.
Think, that's right, which is a phenomenal place to travel if you can't travel outside the country for whatever reason.
You know, people sometimes forget about America. I'm guilty of that. Of when they go, I need to travel. And if I need to travel, that means I have to go to Europe, I have to go to Asia, things
right.
like that. There, it's a huge country. There's no, like, it's the biggest singular country with so many regions. If you carved it up,
yeah.
and all of a sudden Louisiana was its own country,
yeah.
you'd be like, oh, we're going to Louisiana. You'd be
exactly
like, oh my
right.
God.
Yes.
Did you change your currency?
Of course. The way Europeans feel.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, oh, hop on a
You go to you go France next door to Spain, it's a whole different world.
So let's go back a little bit. How yeah. did you get this started? How did the Netflix stuff, because Netflix is obviously out there, you know, sort of courting and calling and things like that, but how did they court and call you? Did you reach out to them? They reach out to you?
It's very simple. The PBS show seemed to go well. We won the James Beard Award after six episodes.
Congratulations.
For Best Food and Travel Show. They didn't pick up the show.
I don't quite understand. We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
So they don't pick up the show.
Right. I'm not going to say anything.
No, we're not going to say anything. We'll just leave
not,
it there.
I
believe the term is a pregnant pause, if you will.
Yeah.
So we'll leave it there. So they don't pick it up.
But here comes Netflix.
There you go.
And now I have a theme song. The show is shot in 4K,
ooh.
Which is ultra high definition. Everything in the show looks beautiful except
beautiful.
For one thing.
I can't say.
You're
that.
Looking at him.
Well, I would say it. So... So how do you start putting it together? Is it just sort of, because it's, you know, still your brother, it's still Lucky
yeah.
Bastard Production,
yeah.
is it sort of just like, all right, we're getting the band back together, we're just going to roll
yeah,
out?
That's right.
Okay. So
the name is different because Netflix brands original content.
Sure.
For them. But here's the other thing. It's on in every friggin' country. When last Friday, when they pushed the button,
yeah.
we were on every country on Earth except for North Korea and Syria, I think. And
that's
we're getting, if you look at my, if you go to Phil Rosenthal Twitter
yeah.
and look at the mentions,
mm-hmm.
people are writing in from all over the world. It's the happiest, I can't tell you how thrilled I am because we do these things. All we do as human beings on the planet is look to connect with other people.
Yeah.
That's it. And this is the biggest connection of my life.
And have you found people have made connections already? I mean, it's only been out for about a week.
I can't believe it.
And
people, they told me, somebody at Netflix told me, you're going to go to bed Thursday night.
Right.
Thursday at midnight, LA time, is when the show drops.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment it turns Friday, literally,
yeah.
the show is everywhere on Earth.
Everywhere.
Okay? You will wake up to people tweeting you that they've seen all six episodes already.
Stayed up all, well, I guess it's not all night, depending where you are. All night or they skip work.
Which I think, by the way, between you and me... It's crazy.
It's a little
crazy. I'm telling people, what are you binging for? It's not like it's a cliffhanger. Oh, I wonder if he gets sick next time. No, I didn't throw up. I can, spoiler alert, I'm perfectly fine in every episode. Every episode took months to make and is a 1 hour
movie
about this place that I would like you to savor and indulge in and digest even
it's
like
not,
a meal.
I don't think that's how it
people
works anymore.
People don't do it. I can't tell you how to watch. I'm thrilled if you watch. So watch any way you want. But I'm just saying, don't hurt yourself binging.
Now, I want to dive a little bit deeper into not just picking the cities, but the places themselves. Because
yeah.
you definitely have an approachable type of curation to these shows, because sometimes when I watch other travel shows with other hosts, it's very obvious that you need to know the chef or have been in the game for a long time, or you're getting a wink and a nod that you know you'll never experience. But you've pitched the show as like, get on the ground,
yeah,
do your research in advance,
uh-huh.
but get on the ground and go.
Well, there's some research that we can all do. We all have a device in our pocket.
Sure.
That's the world encyclopedia of everything. And you can go Google best restaurants in Saigon. And now you know where to eat.
Or where to start.
Yes. And then I leave room in each show.
Yeah.
For what's going to happen when I'm there. And the local says, don't go there. You go here.
So in finding these places, in discovering these places when you get on the ground and things like that, what is that feeling? What is that feeling of when you find a place? Because I know in the Lisbon episode, you said that Ramiro, is the type of place that you would love to eat. You would love to have a Ramiro in every city.
Didn't it look like that?
It did.
Didn't it look like that?
It's
as casual as where we're sitting right now.
Yeah.
Which is just wood table and chairs.
Yeah.
Right? A big, kind of big hall.
Yeah.
You know, it has a little decoration, but it's certainly not what you would say is a fancy
sure.
restaurant. But it does have the greatest hits of seafood.
Yeah.
Of the ocean. I had 8 or 9 different varieties of prawns and shrimp. Things I never saw before. How about those carabinieri shrimp?
Oh my God.
They call them carabinieri because they look like the red of the police car dome spinning light. That's how red they are. Red as your headphones. Absolutely. I'm telling you, pull the head off this thing.
Yeah.
Okay? You're going to have that big meat, like a lobster tail. That's how big it is. But what's in the head of that shrimp, I hope you're not grossed out by this, people. You drink that?
Yeah.
There's nothing in there except the natural juices of this particular shrimp. I'm telling you, it's like God made seafood soup.
Yes.
The best seafood soup you ever had in your life. How is that? That's almost proof of, if I'm an atheist,
sure.
this is almost going to convince me otherwise.
Right. So it goes amoeba shrimp soup.
How do you get that?
Yeah.
How, what is that?
What is that? So,
anyway, you know, that's the reason you travel, to have a thing like that. That blows your mind.
And so now that you have traveled and seen the food of the people, do you feel closer
yes.
to these people?
Yes.
Do you feel that you, when you walk away, you have a better understanding and you've shared a better understanding with people?
Food is the great connector.
Right.
And what I found was laughs are the cement.
Hmm.
So you and I are going to eat lunch.
Yeah.
And it's going to be good, especially if the food is good, we're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
But if we also laugh a little bit together, now we're friends.
Yeah.
And I want to see you again.
Right.
And we're going to have another lunch.
And we have another meal.
Right. And now we're buddies, and now we're going to watch the game together. We're going to go out. We're going to wife swap. Oh, I said too much.
So, you know, we talk a lot about on the show about authenticity uh-huh. and traveling and going to these places, and especially living in L.A. where you could go get, you know, Thai food
yeah.
in Thai town.
Yeah.
You go to Bangkok
yeah.
and you get amazing food and things like that.
Here's
the
thing.
How do you how do you feel about that, where the authenticity of traveling, or is it necessary, not necessary? You know, does it mean more to you because you had a certain sort of cuisine in L.A. versus Bangkok?
Okay, so here's the message.
Yeah.
If you, this in an effort to get you to travel and really see why this is so special, if you like a food, if you like Thai food,
mm-hmm.
go to the source.
Yeah, go to the source.
If you like a taco, go to the source.
Now, when you were in Mexico City,
yeah.
how many tacos did you eat?
Almost every day. Almost every day, tacos.
It's amazing.
Because they are unbelievable. And we have amazing, fantastic tacos in L.A., but not quite as good as Mexico City. They were carving this thing on the street, the El Pastor.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how delicious. People were walking past it. I couldn't understand how you could walk past this amazing place. Of course, I'm an idiot because these are Mexicans and they have tacos every day. Yeah, we've seen tacos.
Yeah, we've seen it. My mother makes it better.
Yes.
Yes. My mother has a spit of meat.
But Mexico City is so close and you're in a fantastic world.
And so, in this world, in bringing these people, what is the biggest piece of advice you can give to people to go find their own world?
Start with, if you're like me and you're planning a vacation around food, where you're going to eat, what's your favorite food?
Sure.
And let's go one step further. Your favorite ethnic food.
Right.
I promise, whatever that answer is, you will love that country.
Right. Because you're going
to swear to God.
You love the. You already know that you love the flavors.
It's really that simple.
Because you'll know you love the history, because
yes.
the food is the history, it is
yes.
the culture.
I'm saying, if you like a food, go to where that food comes from. And you'll be happy. It's a good vacation.
It's a great vacation. Now, before we run out of time, I need to ask about the theme song. Because as a show that also has a theme song.
Yes, which is very cute.
Very cute. Thank you, Wallpaper, forever and ever.
It's very good.
How did that song come about? What was the inspiration?
I met Lake Street Dive, this amazing band. They, I think they're tremendous.
Fantastic.
I think she, Rachel, is one of the best singers in the world. I think every part of them, I love their spirit. I love their little sense of humor. I love everything about them.
Yeah.
And the songs are good. They're good songwriters. I wrote some notes down for the type of song. I wondered if they'd be interested.
Yeah.
And they delivered.
Big time.
I'm telling you.
What's the response?
I don't know. 99% fantastic. Like, people are writing, they can't get it out of their heads.
It's like ringtones now, right?
You know, Friends is a beloved sitcom,
sure.
Right? I'm going to say that not a tiny part of the reason it's still in your head as beloved is that phenomenal theme song.
Oh, yeah. A good theme song.
Yes.
Yeah.
It catches you.
Yeah.
It gets in your head, and it kind of defines the spirit of the show. That's what a great theme song does. I don't think my show is as good as that theme song that I have. I think they're great.
I think it's part of a, you know, a sum of the parts,
yes,
if you will.
Yes.
So what's next? Six episodes are done.
Right. They're calling this part one, which tells me, because I'm not really stupid, there might be more. Why would you call something part one if there wasn't going to be more?
I mean, wouldn't that be the cruelest thing?
That would be mean.
That would be so mean.
Netflix. Don't do that, Netflix.
Part one.
Yeah, but I'm already.
What's on the wish list?
Let's go. We got to do more.
What's your city wish list?
You name it. Go ahead.
You name it?
Yeah, name it.
Well, you've been to a lot of places.
There's no shortage. And then you know, like Bourdain, he runs through, and then he runs through again.
Yeah, so you could be like Istanbul.
It's time to do it again.
You could do some Montreal.
Anything that's not on the watch list,
yes,
I'm going.
Not on the watch list.
Yeah.
And finally, I want to bring it back to your parents, because they did feed you at the beginning. They didn't start.
You don't have to mince words. I know they're the stars of the show.
They're the stars of the show.
I know that people come up to me and we go, oh, we like your show. We love your parents. I'm like, so why do I bother traveling? I could sit in the kitchen with them if that's what you like.
But how did that start? Because they were with you. They weren't with you with Keller in London, but they were with you at the PBS show. Were you and your brother like, we owe mom and dad a spot in the show?
No.
Or how did it happen?
I made the documentary Exporting Raymond.
Sure.
And I Skyped with them from Russia.
Great.
They were the funniest part of that movie.
Sure.
So I thought, if I'm doing this show, I realized that the Skype call home is the modern day equivalent of the postcard.
Sure.
This is how we now can do it instantly. I can point the thing out the window and show them where I am. I can show them the food I'm eating.
Right?
And they can complain about what's happening at their house. About each other. And that's funny. And it's very, very, I find, relatable.
It is.
Even though my parents aren't your parents, you get the parent thing.
I get the parent thing. Well, I have Jewish parents, too.
But even if you don't.
Even if you don't.
We relate to each other's specificities just because they're specific.
Yeah.
That's what human beings do. We hook into the... That's the relatable part. If I try to be vague and not be myself or be that white bread guy,
yeah,
that's not relatable.
And you and one final point is that you get that in the show. Because you're in a foreign country.
Yep.
Something maybe you've never even heard of or thought of before. And you go, oh, they have noodles? I know noodles.
Yes.
I can hop in on that.
Yes.
Well, Phil, thank you so much.
I love being here. This was fun. And you fed me.
Yes.
What could be better? This is the best podcast in the world.
Thank you. Thank you, Lassa, for opening your doors to us. I would be doing a misservice if I didn't give you a few seconds to promote and push. Where can people find the show?
I think it's called Netflix.
I don't know if the X is next. Netflix.
Like Grand Prix,
yeah,
is spelled with an X, right?
Yes.
Let's call it that from Netflix. Now on, everybody.
Oh, I'm an international man.
I'm on Netflix.
So it's all the episodes up there, and then you also have a very healthy Instagram, Twitter presence. Where can they find you?
Phil Rosenthal Twitter, Phil.Rosenthal Instagram. I think Phil Rosenthal something, I don't know what it is on Facebook. But listen, I'm happy if you just go on the Netflix and look at give a try.
Give a rating too.
I don't know, do they do that?
I think they do.
Okay.
Well, listen, thank you so much. We have one more song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll see you next week. Watch the show. Go binge.
I need another coconut.
We'll get you another coconut.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.